Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to No Small Roles. Now, regular listeners will know that we are an actual play podcast full of mystery, adventure, role play, and a fair amount of silliness and spoons. However, when we heard there was an opportunity to talk with Shelley Mazenoble and Greg Tito, two D&D podcasting legends, about their upcoming book Welcome to Dragon Talk, well, we just couldn't pass that up. Now, if this is your first time listening to No Small Roles, welcome, and help yourself to a cuppa. My name is Ben Galpin, and I play Artificer Orin Quill. And in this interview, I'm joined by David Knight, our DM and composer, and Daryl Bailey, who plays our Hexblade Warlock Enkidu. As well as our main campaign, we have a number of shorter adventures for new listeners to dip their toes into, so please do give us a listen. But now, let's crack on with our chat with Greg and Shelley. Hello and welcome to No Small Roles, a very special episode of No Small Roles this week, where there are no small roles, but two very special guests. We are joined this week by Shelley Mazenoble and Greg Tito from Wizards of the Coast / Dungeons and Dragons. So, hey, Greg and Shelley, thank you so much for joining us.
Hello. Thank you for having us.
Welcome. I'm sorry I dropped a soul coin in the middle of your intro.
Oh, was that you?
just casual soul coin drop
yeah,
there.
Exactly.
Has it been used or is it full of souls?
It is full of one soul, but I won't reveal whose it is. It's Daryl's.
Okay. Oh, it's mine. Thanks.
I am now concerned.
Sorry, Daryl.
I just hope it's worth a lot.
It is. Very
wherever you're going to take it.
Okay, we'll look out for some infernal machines later on to power up with that later. So for the listeners, the few listeners who don't know who Greg and Shelley are, I've written some scribbled notes. So I believe Shelley is Senior Brand Manager for Dungeons & Dragons, co-host of Dragon Talk, author of Confessions of a Part-Time Sorceress, A Girl's Guide to the Dungeons & Dragons Game.
Yes.
Nearly got it right. Everything I Need to Know I Learned from Dungeons & Dragons, a one-woman's quest to self-trade self-help for elf help.
That's my favorite.
These long titles are hard to say.
I know, I'm so sorry.
Playwright of Blue Malls, which I believe you also starred in, Chicken in the Egg, and most importantly, perhaps, West Middle School's 7th grade badminton doubles team champion.
Yes! Yes, finally somebody sees me for who I truly am. Well done.
And we have Greg Tito, who's Senior Communications Manager at Wizards of the Coast, co-horse of Dragon... Co-horse?
I'm a co-horse.
Wait, which co-horse. Part of the horse does that make me, then?
Yeah, are you front or back?
The butt.
Co-host of Dragon Talk, writer and producer of upcoming short film Ex-Husband, host and editor of Re-Engage, the Star Trek Next Generation podcast, and a theatre carpenter, I believe.
That's right.
Handy.
Yeah, very handy.
Yeah, I have put together lots of things that look good for 2 weeks. 50 feet away.
This is perfect skills. And now you are both authors and also, I believe, audiobook narrators of Welcome to Dragon Talk.
Yeah.
So thank you so much, Greg and Shelley, for joining us.
Thank you.
My first question is, how on earth do you find time to fit everything in?
Well, in
it
between.
It feels like quite an extensive list.
Right, especially when you're training up to be a badminton champion such as myself. It does, does take a lot. Greg and I had many, many very late nights writing this book. But fortunately, we got to do this together. And by together, I mean we had a shared doc and right around 11 o'clock at night, we would both pop in there. And then I could see like the word count going up and like see like Greg Tito's also in this doc. And it just made me feel very comforted and happy to know we're here together until the wee hours.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then the awkward moment when one of you logs off and you're like, okay, well, I guess I'll carry on then.
I'm all alone in this shared doc.
Did you leave each other notes as you wrote? Like, this is how I'm getting on today.
Yes, we did. We had a Teams chat going on. Like, hey, how's it going? Good. Like, what are you working on? Read this section and see if this sounds right. Or do you remember this interview with this person? And that was a really funny thing you said.
That was my favorite bit where we'd be like, you know, as part of writing, sometimes you're just spewing out words as much as you can just to get it out. And having just someone like Shelley be there to be like, oh, hey, I really liked this essay. And then I'd be like, oh, okay, it's not just garbage words that are coming out of my fingertips onto the page. These are actually, you know, worthwhile things. So having a co-author was great because it just had each of us having our backs and lifting each other up like we do in the podcast to all of the D&D creators out there.
Like a D&D party.
Like a party. Aww.
Yeah.
D&D party of authors. I love that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Scribbles note.
Scribbles. Daryl, get your notebook ready. Yeah.
Which one?
Who was the DM, though, in the party of two? That's the question.
That's a good question. I sometimes step in to do that for our Daryl and Drunky Two Shoes. So. But in this case, I think you were the DM of
this
book. It was
like we were like co-DMs.
Yeah. But because Shelley had the two books previously already published, I definitely look to you to be like, what do I do here? What's going on? Not, you know.
Just write. Yeah,
exactly. Keep going until it's done. Yeah.
How long did the sort of the process take from sort of starting sitting down the first time to finishing up the Google Doc and sending it off?
Good question.
I think about a year total.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, well, that's what we were given.
Oh, right.
Probably the amount of time we actually took was probably, 6 months compressed.
Near the deadline rather than.
Yes.
Yes. The longest part was probably re-listening to all of the episodes. Mm. At least for me, because I did want to go back and reflect upon why. We knew what essays we felt compelled to write about. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to go back and re-listen and remember certain things and just make sure that, you know, because there is an actual record of how the interview happened.
Oh, yeah,
I wanted to make sure I was doing it justice. But that they're each like an hour long. So it took a while to go back and review them all and then take notes on them and then kind of figure out what the through line was and then write it. And then, of course, edit. Takes a while, but thankfully publishing is a very slow moving industry.
Yes.
And the largest time consumer, Shelley, was having to psych yourself up into listening to your voice.
It's true.
The podcast. You got over that.
You're not a big fan of your own voice.
No. And it's a shame because I really like the podcast.
It's a really good podcast.
I would totally listen to this if I weren't on it.
Just like someone asked me now.
Who shares that?
So a good friend of ours, Sarah Gain, we've worked with her for many years. Mm-hmm. She's guested on our podcast twice. And over the 2.5 years that we've been doing this podcast, she's not listened to a single episode.
She can't bring herself to do it. Yeah.
Because she doesn't like her voice. Either?
I don't know. It's partly that.
Part of it, too, is like, you don't want to sound dumb. You know, like, I don't want to go back and be like, oh, I can't believe I said that. Or that's a ridiculous thing. Or what a dumb joke. But I got.
Oh, that's me every week when No Small Rose comes out. I'm like, did I really say that? Did I make that choice?
I guess I'll die then. I have the total opposite. Like, I'm listening back to an episode. I'm like, this would be it. I hope someone makes this joke. And then, like, I make the joke.
We had that same experience, at least I did, where I was listening back to old interviews and be like, ha, ha, ha. And I had a little joke to myself. And then I could hear myself waiting and trying to say that joke in the podcast.
Yes.
Making the exact same joke. It's like, this is an out-of-body, weird experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because enough time has passed. I guess, like, I don't know what the oldest interview was that was from the book, but I guess quite a few years had passed probably for some of them.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. It's probably Dan Harmon is probably the earliest, right?
Oh, yes. Cool.
Yeah, that was pre-Greg, even.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that makes sense,
How was the process different, did you find? Because you've both written solo, I guess, Shelley, you've written sort of books, and like Greg, I think, written more sort of screenplays and things like that. Did you enjoy the process more of working as a team and like getting to sort of share the load and
That part was nice. That was nice to share the load, but I will also say, like, just being accountable to yourself is like, you're gonna, like, you know, if you let yourself down, that's it's a feel bad, but to think about letting down like a friend and a partner it made me just work harder and faster. Like, I'm not going to be late. I'm definitely not going to be late. And I'm going to write the best thing I can possibly write, because Greg's name is attached to this too. And I want him to be proud, and I want him to feel good about the output of our work together. And just like, also, I want to do right by the D&D community and all of the people that were the focus of these interviews too. Like, I want them to feel good about why we put them in this book as well. So I guess there's pros and cons, but I think they're all pro. But it's just like, I did not want to disappoint Greg. I just didn't want, him to be mad at me.
And the same for me, honestly. Like, I had never written a book before, as you said. Like, I'd written parts of stuff and RPG materials and screenplays and plays. And those are collaborative things as well, right? They're not necessarily solo. And I really found that I only can do those type of things if I am accountable to somebody, even if it isn't necessarily a co-author. Like, having somebody who's like keeping track and be like, oh, did you do the thing? And then having that little social embarrassment of like, no, I didn't do the thing. Fighting against that is like super huge for me in any type of creative endeavor. Having Shelley be there and watching and being like, huh, all right, she's written 4 essays and I've already written 2. That means I got to write, you know, 2 more to kind of get up and going balance. I think actually the balance is way more in Shelley's favor. She's written more of the essays than I did, but it was always like this. I got to make sure I live up to what you're doing.
But you know what? You and I both have different ways of writing. And I think we figured that out early on, because my style is I just write to get it out. And I know that that first draft sucks, and that's, who cares? Like, I'm not going to, I don't edit. I don't, like, it's just not good, but it's just the words, like the framework. It's like framing a house. It's like the frame is there. And then I will go in and then I will, you know, do all the other stuff, it full of insulation and drywall and paint and maybe put a little wallpaper over on this corner and then it's done. But Greg, your essays, like, you do more of a solid draft the first time through. So it might have taken a little longer to do those first drafts, but I think you probably had less editing to do than I did after. So it all came out in the wash.
That is true. Yeah.
That's a nice, your styles really complement each other, I guess. A lot of writers I listen to talk about, you know, some are on like Shelley's camp, like, just get it out. The important thing is it exists. You can revise it later, be a perfectionist later. Whereas some people are like, I need the first attempt to be as good as I can possibly be, no matter how long it takes.
Yeah.
And it's nice that you have that kind of like balance between you. So that's quite nice.
Yeah. And we didn't figure that out right at first, which makes me think, like, maybe like if you co-author something, you should do like a session zero with your partner.
And
you're like, here's how I'm gonna approach this, and don't panic, they're gonna get done and they're gonna be good, but you're gonna read a first draft and you're gonna be like, I don't want my name on this book with this person.
Yeah, I got you.
Well, and we did a pretty intensive proposal along with like sample writing, and I think that is for me where it coalesced into an actual project, right? Where we actually were like, okay, here's what we're going to framework and how we're going to get a lot, you know, to continue your house metaphor, Shelley. Like, that was the framing. And then us writing it was like, oh, we're decorating this room, we're decorating that room. Like, that came easier once, to me, I had the framework in my head. And also the voice. Like, I think I wasn't sure exactly how I was going to approach the voice of my essays. And it wasn't until I saw yours, Shelley, that I was like, oh, okay, it's the casual, self-deprecating, jokey way of narrating, you know, thoughts and feelings. I was like, okay, I can do that. I can get into that mode pretty easily. And so I think that way it was a very much similar, not to hammer this point home, but it did really feel like a D&D party where we were building off each other almost in an improv way and got to a finish line by listening more than just writing ourselves.
How much of an influence on each other's writing did you have? Like, was there any like edits and big swings and cuts for either of you to make, or like, oh, maybe you should talk more about like this section here?
I don't know that we really did.
Yeah. Not a ton, honestly. Which is weird how it all kind of matches up.
That's the thing, reading through it. It feels like a unified voice. Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. That's a good question. I mean, there were sections when I definitely was like, I need you to read this and I need you to help me. And then he would give me that feedback. But yeah, we didn't really tinker too much in each other's essays unless we were requested to do so.
Sure. So that's the thing. It's like inviting someone over as opposed to like,
Yeah. If we want to use the house metaphor again, like,
yeah,
please knock before coming into my home and like rearranging my furniture.
Exactly. I've put the sofa over here and I just need a second pair of eyes to make sure that it's working.
Yeah. Do you like it? Do you like this picture here?
Mm-hmm. And I do love the tone that you found as well, and the sort of the footnote idea as well, that
yes.
Each of you, the little comments, there are some real footnotes, but then also a lot of the footnotes in the book are more commentary.
Absolutely.
We wanted to get the podcast feel out there, right? So there's certainly times when Shelley tells a story and I'll make jokey comments and vice versa. And we wanted to have that feel so it wasn't quite so... And because, you know, we co-host each interview. So even though we wrote the individual essays ourselves, we wanted to make it feel like it wasn't just... one person's thoughts, right? Having more of the voice and the commentary from the other host throughout it. And I'll tell you, there were a lot more footnotes in there too, in the original draft that we sent in, and we toned it back quite a bit because it did kind of break up the flow too much for a continual storyline. And those are actually really hard to do in an audiobook form, which we are now realizing.
How does that even work?
Do you just take a highlighter pen and just here's this.
Skip to 1 hour and 15 minutes to hear footnote one. Skip to
right now. We're reading them kind of at the like end of the paragraph. And trying to keep it that way, as well as in our essays, I'm reading Shelley's footnotes.
But you're
saying
my name.
Which is weird
because
I did put a little affectation on the first time. I was like, I'm like Shelley. And the person who was recording was like, you know, don't do that.
That's not what she sounds like. Yeah.
Cut it. It sucks. Yeah. Don't do that.
Yeah. That's hilarious. Just going to go for a retake on that one.
I mean, that's making me now wonder whether you attempted voices for other people that get quoted in the book. Or...
Did you, Greg?
I did not.
I didn't either.
We are not. Okay. we are not Matt Mercer and able to drop into other voices quite so easy. But there's a lot of quotes in the essays where we do have direct quotes from folks. And there was a moment where I was like, should we be doing different voices? I've certainly read or listened to audiobooks of fantasy novels, and those voice actors are so great at doing different voices for dialogue. But we are not that skilled.
No, I did try to like do a little bit of acting though when I was reading a quote or something. But for somebody who doesn't like the sound of their own voice, narrating your own audiobook is like aversion therapy. You're like, oh, I can't get her out of my head. She's just here. It was crazy.
That's the thing, when you're listening to it back to it, when it's only your voice on the recording.
Yeah.
It was horrifying.
It was actually similar to the way we were talking about before we started recording with Daryl doing ADR stuff. It was actually very similar to that.
Yes.
In a way, because it was really fascinating. I'd never done any audiobooks before, so it was really cool to be a part of the process and have them, all right, we're going to take that again. And then they just loop back where you were and you're supposed to jump in naturally with the flow.
Yeah.
And I was like, God, this is so great. And we were, able to bang it out a lot faster than I thought. I thought I was going to be talking for hours and hours and hours. which I was.
But. Yeah.
No. I'm like, weren't you?
In consulting. Because I was. Yeah. Yeah. There's been some big cuts since since the last version. It's just the footnotes.
Just the footnotes. Just chapter footnotes. Titles. Yeah.
There's nothing else left.
So how did you go about deciding who and what to include in the book? Because you guys are approaching, what, over 400 episodes, right?
Yeah.
Huge amount of Dragon Talk, like, stuff to sift through. So was it an instant, like, oh yeah, we definitely want to talk about these people, or was there a little bit of back and forth, a bit of decision making?
There was a lot of discussion about it, because on, like you said, there was at the time we were doing the proposal, there was more than almost 300 episodes, and then we got to 300 episodes after that. Lot of conversations about wonderful people who do amazing things, and we honestly tried to go towards ones that had more of a personal connection to us, or that we could elucidate more in the essay about it than just like, oh, this was happened and this was funny. You know, there are a few essays I think that are like that, because you can't, you know, just the performance and or interviews were so great, or the stories they told were just amazing. And so there are some that are more translation like that, but still there's always a connection. And as Shelley is fond of saying, we certainly have a type, the two of us. Like, I like ones that are more performers, entertainers, screenplay writers, things like that. Shelley certainly loves writing essays about people who are work with kids, or use D&D in a education or a therapy type of way. Certainly a lot more of the essays that you wrote, Shelley, went in that bench, right?
For sure. Yeah, we definitely, there were some that just immediately we were like, we have to write about these people. Like, we each made our own list. There were some that just rose right to the top that we know we were super excited about or inspired by. But then there were, you know, I can't write an entire book about just therapists who use D&D. Maybe one day, yeah. But like, I think like I probably should have had some variety.
Don't rule it out.
Yeah, I was gonna say. Maybe not for this book, but I think we also, it was important for us to show the diversity of the community, to show like the breadth of the community, and how anyone who reads this book could look at it and say, oh, like, I can see myself as part of this community. Like, there is something for everyone in here. And fortunately, we've been blessed to have a lot of different types of people come on Dragon Talk and want to talk about their D&D fandom. Mm-hmm. And whether it's because they're creating really cool D&D content now, or because they are in a line of work that has nothing to do with D&D, but they were always inspired by D&D. Like, they'll say, like, well, D&D's the thing that taught me how to write stories, and now I'm an author, you know. So
yeah
it's good stuff.
And after we got to the point that we wanted to write about the community members, that we wanted to write about the people that we interviewed, there was a moment where, like, well, a lot of what we're describing here is a moment in time, right? Like, this was you know, 6 or 7 years that we have been producing Dragon Talk, and it is a very like a inflection point in the D&D community, where so many more folks have gone into it, and it's been enriched because of that. And we needed to provide context. It was one of the big pieces of feedback from our editors and the people at University of Iowa Press was like, you know, you can certainly get into the weeds pretty quickly because this is a D&D podcast. There's a lot of stuff to discuss. And so they had the great idea to show like some of the history of Dungeons & Dragons, like give the broad strokes, like let people know what, you know, the difference between AD&D is and third edition D&D, and not just in the mechanics, but in the way the community worked and how that impacted and provided context for what, you know, the period of time that a lot of the essays were concentrated on, like, you know, 2015 on. So that was really exciting. And then it became for me not only a record of the growth of the D&D community, but how it has changed and shifted and, you know, improved over the decades that D&D has been out there. And so it's been really cool to have this be like, okay, you know, there's lots of histories of Dungeons & Dragons and how the company was formed, but we're not really about that. It's about how the people around it and the people who have played D&D have grown and shifted. Mm. So that was really fun.
Mm. Yeah, that sense of sort of community. And I think it's sort of covered in the book to an extent, but I was just like wondering what you sort of both attribute because there's been it seems to me, I'm a relative newbie to D&D. I only started playing in 2019.
Same,
so
same.
I've only ever known fifth edition. And I've only ever known the sort of, you know, recent few years, but like it's, just be really interesting to hear what the sort of the, you attribute the sort of the huge growth that D&D has gone through in the last, I guess, sort of decade or so.
Well, like, this is verging into day job territory too, because I think about a lot as far as being how to
if you could just share the analytics that you go through every day, that'd be great.
Well, I think
this is a company-wide meeting that you prepared a PowerPoint for.
Can you give me share? Can I share my PowerPoint?
I'll never share screen access. Yeah,
and it's just a picture of that stonks. It's going up. but in some ways, that honestly is what has occurred with this community, which is amazing. I came into Dungeons and Dragons on the Wizards of the Coast team March 2015. That was the same week I started was the same week that Critical Role premiered on Twitch.
Whoa. And
totally coincidence, but in many ways I trace a lot of this growth and change back to that time, because there had been live play stuff before, but nothing had the amount of impact that Acquisitions Incorporated did first in podcast form and then into live shows. But the weekly Twitch was relatively new in 2015. I think it had just been acquired by Amazon like a year before for only $4 billion. Crazy to think about now. But anyway.
So cheap.
I know, right? It's like,
if only we'd known, we could have picked it up. We could have just went in on it together.
You're right. You guys, what can all go all in? But I think
I'll just check our Patreon balance.
That period of people being able to create video content around and actual play of Dungeons and Dragons changed everything. In addition to a couple other factors, which is the fact that huge fantasy franchises like Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter before. Went to shit. Were really immensely popular in the early 2000s, right? And I think all of the kids who were watching that had gotten a little bit older by that point, and it became much more of a mainstream thing to jump into fantasy. It wasn't quite so, you know, hands arm's length like it had been in the previous decades, and people were more open to that. And then fifth edition itself is such a well put together game that brought in the focus on character and performance and improv while still having the nitty gritty tactical mechanics there, and the ability to balance those in an edition was really great. And I think all those factors, in addition to the fact that people could watch people playing and get an idea of how to play the game a little bit easier, you know, many of you, like if you guys are new to the game, you didn't start by just cracking up a book and trying to figure out how to make the game out of it.
No way.
And I always make this analogy. People don't learn how to play basketball or football, soccer, by reading the manual of the rules of how to play soccer or basketball, right? Like you watch it, you watch people play it, you emulate your heroes. You listen to the commentary, you know, you absorb all that, and then you like kind of, you know, learn how to play. And I think that's what's happened for Dungeons and Dragons, where people are getting the gameplay is not so alien because there's so much content out there that makes it more easier to understand and easier to grok and be like, I want to do that. And then you're like, well, we have all of these tools to be able to make you allow you to be able to do that. And I think that's really changed everything. Yeah. In addition, Dragon Talk changed the world, so that also
that's the number one.
I mean, you can give it, you're allowed to give yourself a pat on the back without feeling awkward about it. I think in the book, Shelley, you mentioned, I'm pretty sure I coined D&D next. I was like, that's small footnote. Do you want to expand on that?
I do think, okay, let's be clear, like I didn't, like, you know, those aren't my rules. I'm not saying that I created fifth edition. I'm just saying that we kept referring in meetings about it as like the playtest or whatever, and we just needed to call it something. It needed to have its own name. And I think I just was offhandedly like D&D Next. Like it's just whatever, the next. And then people started using it. I'm like, One day I'm going to write a book and that will be a footnote.
Everyone will
know. Write that down right now.
So did you come up with one D&D as well? Or was that?
No, see, that's everyone's follow-up question. No, I did not. I was going to call it D&D next end.
Next. Didn't have as much rolling off the tongue.
I don't know why they didn't go with it. Don't know.
That would be great.
But I love that too. Also, in our discussing about our day jobs in the book, people are going to get some details that were not known before, right? Like that we haven't really talked about publicly. Nothing, you know, salacious, but certainly like a little bit about like, oh, this is how the marketing worked and how we chose to do certain things. And so that was to me also kind of a really interesting detail to add to it. Like the I didn't know that Shelley created D&D Next, even though we've been working together for 6 years.
I named it. I
knew each other back then. I remember being invited, and we talked about this too. I remember being invited to the Wizards of the Coast offices and seeing you there, Shelley, and being like, oh, hey, what's going on?
Yes.
In 2012.
Well, I'm really looking forward to somebody reading this book and then being like, I created D&D Next. I was in that meeting and it was me who said it. Okay, dude, it's you. I said 99%. That's why I said 99% sure.
Yeah.
Second publishing of the book will be like an extra footnote.
I know, yeah.
Oh, no problem. Actually, it wasn't me.
All the rebuttals from readers.
Oh my gosh.
Well, controversy sells books, so that's what I was trying to do. Yeah.
But I mean, joking aside, I feel like talking about Dragon Talk, like, I'm sure has been a big influence on people learning how to play the game. It was certainly a big influence for me. Like David here in the chat got me into D&D back in spring 2019. Mm-hmm. And then I think I had a month in between our first and second session where I just went, okay, I'm going to find out everything about this thing.
Yes. Yes, that
having
happens.
Having gone into that game initially, going, how quickly can I leave this room, and is it polite to email immediately back saying thanks, but I never want to do whatever that was again?
and then it was like 5 hours later. You were like, when are we playing next?
Yeah.
Just to make that clear, it wasn't the game itself that was going bad.
No.
No,
the game was amazing.
Yeah. And here we are.
That was a big part of when we started doing Dragon Talk more regularly. Was to show exactly that, like that it's easy to get into it. You don't have to be a specific type of person. All you really need to do is be a human who enjoys stories. And you can have all of the other, Shelley loves reality TV and is a person who 30 years ago might not have been into Dungeons and Dragons, but is into it now. And I like to always show the breadth of like, oh yeah, I like sports. I like other things. I'm not, pigeonholed into one, type of stereotype for what a Dungeons and Dragons player is. And I think we really tried to do that as much as possible throughout the podcast. And I think that did some small way contribute to this idea that D&D is not for uncool people. It is for cool people who enjoy stories.
It's a tool to make you cool, basically, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, yes. However it is that
it's
you enjoy your cool...
You.
This is how this is a space to then do that further in. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's one thing that I've always loved about the Dragon Talk is like, the lore you know sections, the lore you should know. Mm. Like all of those like extra stories that the podcast has been an amazing little dip in into things, like you say, that you don't need to know. It's just like fun extra stuff for everybody to use or listen to or enjoy, extra little tips. And yeah, like the fact that there's you guys have gone into so much depth in like not only the back catalogs of D&D, but then have reached out to the community to see like what's coming next as well.
Yeah.
It's just incredibly enjoyable.
Oh, thank you.
Great. Yeah. Glad you like it.
And also the how to DM sections, which I personally found very useful because I've only been playing for 3 years, I guess, now, and then jumping into doing a bit of DMing as
really?
Well. For friends and also for the podcast. That's happened.
Ooh,
yeah.
Nice.
which no feels pressure. Even more pressurized.
Yeah, exactly.
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
People are going to listen to this.
That's very brave. Very brave.
And also more worryingly, perhaps, like playing in David's our regular DM and playing in his carefully constructed homebrew world, and then you start going, okay, try not to break anything in the world.
It's there to be broken.
Destroy the stories.
You can't break anything. It's improv. You can always, you know.
It's fantasy, exactly.
Yeah.
Get out of it.
Absolutely.
I was going to offer a different word. Retcon. It's one of my favorite words in our show. Retcon is not used for the right context. And so, oh, I just want to go over what I said. There was ask a question, but I go, retcon. Can I do this? Unretcon. And be like, wait, what? But if you break the world, we can retcon.
Just retcon.
It's a safe word.
Safe word.
It's just become absolute word of the show.
It is. Yeah. And when we the retcons like, for the editors,
partial retcons.
Partial retcons. Yeah. Oh, retcon that retcon.
Don't worry about that. Re-retcon.
And then we just leave it. We don't. Yeah. We don't even edit it out. We just leave it.
Yeah. I like it.
Yeah,
makes it easy.
It's become our equivalent of your footnotes. I think.
Yes.
That's exactly.
Yep.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah. Off the back of the how to DMing, I was going to ask Shelley how your DMing is going.
Yeah.
I think doing Beyond the Witchlight. Is that right?
I did. I ran. So I have neighbors they have two daughters, 8 and 10, and the mom and dad. And they were like, we want to learn how to play D&D. We're interested. Oh. Cool. So I picked the Wild Beyond the Witchlight because I thought the carnival would be just something that everybody mm-hmm. has been to and they could relate mm-hmm. to, because they are not like, they don't have any experience whatsoever with D&D or other role-playing games. Plus it's the two girls and they'll love meeting the Displacer Beast and, you know, playing all the carnival games. I have so little confidence in my DMing skills that I just really leaned into immersion, and I bought like carnival themed everything, and like I had cotton candy, and I had like like all sorts of candy. Like I just made everything like feel and look like you were actually at a carnival. I even had an amazing playlist that I found on Spotify that was circus music, but it was actually quite enjoyable. So hot tip for anyone who needs a good Wild Beyond the Witchlight playlist, let me know. I'll send you the link. So that was playing when they came in. They had no idea like what our adventure was going to be. I even had like this tiny little top hat on, and I was like, hello, welcome. They're like, oh, this amazing. Is, I don't know. What's wrong with her? What's happening? I didn't teach them. So I've learned from how to be a DM. This is nothing that I've come up with on my own. Nothing. No instincts. I have no DM instincts whatsoever. I've learned it all, but I did not teach them any rules up front. I just said, this is collaborative, this is storytelling. You guys are together. You are an adventuring party. The Wild Beyond the Witchlight gives you so much story. There are so many plot hooks. Mm-hmm. It's almost like, whoa, like, there's too much happening here. But you kind of do have to like narrow down your focus, get them into that carnival, and then expect the unexpected. Because I thought for sure they were going to go right to the lost items booth, because I had told them they lost something there 8 years ago. And no, they were like, gondola rides, let's go on let's ride a swan. Like, I don't even know where those are on the map. What's happening there? They did it. Yes. They didn't. I didn't think the girls were going to be into combat, because, you know, they were just like, I thought they'd want to make friends with things or tame things. And I had like a little bit planned in case we needed to just experience that. But no, they were like, they were really into it. and what was great is that they had showed up thinking about what types of characters they wanted to be. And like the youngest girl was very, very, very quiet. She was like, I want to be a squirrel. And I have a nose ring. I'm like, oh, okay. We're going to make that work. Yes, you're a druid and you're just always a squirrel. No problem. And her sister like carried her around with her. The dad, who's like 6'8", he was like, I'm a halfling. I'm going to see what that's like.
Yo.
He told me afterwards that the girls were just like, just totally excited about it and wouldn't stop talking about it. And they were like, Mom, it was so cool how you sliced that ghoul in half. And like, that's the parts Whoa. That they got really into. They were like, oh, that was the best when Betty used her thorn whip and like grabbed like this one character. And then, I don't know, they tag teamed it. They got into the combat. Awesome. So very wholesome play. Awesome. But ever since then, like the dad, similar to what you were talking about, Ben, that he got really into D&D and he's like went and like read everything he could, and now like he's downloading adventures and he was like, oh, I've already DM'd for them. I'm like, oh, so you don't need me anymore? Now I'm offended. Oh, yeah. So they're all in.
Have they even invited you over to play?
No. So that I'm like, don't you remember the cotton candy and the cool playlist?
Oh my gosh.
Outrageous.
You gave them the taste, Shelley. They gave them the taste
and now they're just running with it. But that's what we want.
Yeah,
that's
fine.
Yeah. Spreading the message of D&D.
Yes, the student has definitely surpassed the master.
Oh, very quickly it seems.
Shelley Moon.
And Greg, do you find you get much time to play home games?
I don't as often as I want to. Each time Shelley talks about it, I'm like, oh, I got to get that going with my my girls. We play. I found if I set it up too much, it gets too anticipatory. I'm not sure. So I've only been like, and I don't want to be the dad that's like, you got to play the thing that I love, that is my job, that is also, I don't want to oversell it too much. Yeah. But then I've also realized like you need to look, it's like the deadline for writing a book. You kind of do need some structure and start going on it. So I want to try and get their friends into it as well, so that it's not just me who's pushing, it's their friends who are pushing them to want to get into it, and it becomes a more regular weekly, bi-weekly thing. But you know, my oldest just started middle school, and so that's a big transitionary time. But now that we're a couple months in, I was like, let's start recruiting some of your friends and see if they want to start coming over. Cool. And I think I'm gonna offer several of the published adventures and just be like, here, there's this one that's got this flavor, this one's got this flavor, this one's got this flavor. Which ones do you want to jump into first? Because I think if I did a homebrew, I would be too with all the stuff that we're listing that we're doing, that's a little bit too much. But being able to be like, all right, here's a couple of different storylines with different flavors, maybe they could get, you know, they'll have some buy-in onto what they want to do.
Yeah.
Sweet. I've got to ask, are there any like moments from games that you've played that are just like standout moments? Because I'm sure we've all had moments in D&D games that we just go, that's gonna last with us forever. And I think quite a few of your interviewees have sort of picked out sort of highlights and moments from their past that just stood out to them as, oh wow, this I will remember even after I've forgotten everything else.
I think like a standout moment for me was early on when I was first learning how to play, when it became clear to me like how this game can really impact real life and real friendships and real bonds, and the things that happen in game can bleed into your real life in a good way. And it was because my character was about to take a tremendous amount of damage, and everybody knew that I was really protective of her. She was my first D&D character ever, and I just didn't like getting into the fray. I didn't like when she took damage, and he took the damage for me. Like, he was a cleric. He had some ability where he was like, just literally like, I'm taking the damage, like just like basically stood in front of whatever it was that was coming for me and just took all my damage and like went down because of it. But he knew like, he was fine. Like he knew as a person, he was okay with that happening. And he knew his character had ways to like heal and be okay. Like, but if that had happened to me, he knew like, well, I don't think she's going to play with us anymore. But it was like, wow. Like, I was stunned that somebody would do that. And I know it's a game. I know it was happening in game. He didn't really like push me out of the way of a truck coming, you know, and but it was like so selfless. And it just made me realize how much that we're working together and that this is how important and special an adventuring party is. And just him as a person is still one of my best friends because he just did that for me. It was like, it was just so, it was so powerful. Like this in-game thing. And it really, made such a lasting impact on the real world me.
I do love those moments that it's like, even like, as you're saying, it all happened in a game, but yeah. That memory of that moment is not you sat around a table together. It's him throwing himself in front of you and like, securing that friendship.
Saving my character. And it was a really good story hook from then on, because my character was so indebted to that character, and just like in the game, they were really bonded and they became very attached, and in real life. We did too. He, this person actually ended up officiating my wedding, even.
Oh, wow.
He's the cleric. It made sense.
Yeah, real life cleric. Not just in game.
No, my dad was so confused. He was so confused.
Yeah.
And Greg, are there any moments that you've had in home games that you just go, oh, my goodness, that's...
I mean, so many. One of my most favorite recently was... All because when the Ravenloft, Van Richten's Guide to Ravenloft came out, there was a monster that I think was called the Stygeroi or something. And it's basically a Sturge that is, beefed up, right? Like as a humanoid Sturge. And I just created this villain I named him Stodgy Boy, and he's got this really weird way of talking, because I was like, I can't say Stygeroi, I don't know, but for something about that word stuck in my head as being, quite evil, and then he had this weird way of talking, and what I had wanted to do is just like have him be this one-off, and then, they would defeat him maybe or not. And then my parties just started being like, oh my God, anything that like jumped or changed or was off in my descriptions of where they were in game, they were all thinking it was going to be Stodgy Boy coming to get them again because he was invisible. And I was like, oh man, I've really created this weird character that is haunting these people, both in game and out of game. So there's that one. And then I was thinking again of my, I love performers. I love bards as a class. I have a lot of go-to classes, but that's become one that I always think about that is, very much Dungeons and Dragons for me. And then I was inspired by glam rock, kind of David Lee Roth, David Bowie, the fact that in the Harry Potter movies, Dumbledore uses his wand to amplify his voice. And I was like, that's so weird and cool. And it reminded me of like Bob Barker in the States. He had like a very thin microphone when he was hosting for Price is Right. And I was like, what if like a rock star who used wands?
Oh my gosh.
Not just as, weapons and to cast spells through, but also just to amplify his voice and to be a rock star. And so I created this kind of glam rock bard sorcerer. That had dual wielding wands that he would twist around like he's twirling drumsticks, and then use illusion magic behind him to create his stage show around him. And then
amazing.
The one time I got to play in this, it was the Descent into Avernus campaign, and the DM was kind enough to give me one performance in the Elf Song Tavern before we went to shit. Before we went into hell and all that. But it was like this one great moment of like, oh yeah, you got the entire tavern pumping along with you. I think I even sang some In Excess Devil Inside, which seemed very thematic to the adventure. That was always a great moment for me where I'm like, all right, all of the character concept and the story and what was happening all came together. I had actual prop wands with me that I was twirling. And I was like, oh God, this is great.
So please tell me when you did get down to Avernus that you did a Mad Max Fury Road fire guitar moment on the front of the Infernal Machines.
Of course, that was part of the inspiration as well. Yeah, it was hot on the tails of that movie. So yeah, that was great. Flamethrower. Burning hands just being cast all the time out of your guitar.
Got to use those cantrips. I fear we'll let you go very soon, but we just have a couple of quick questions from we put a message on our Discord if there were any burning questions, to use the burning hands reference again. And we got a couple of questions. We had a question in from Mike C, who Mike C had a question about finding yourself in the D&D multiverse and asked What dragon would you both choose to be if you found yourself in the D&D multiverse?
I'm Tiamat.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Oh, you just go straight in there.
Let's go.
Straight to the top.
Let's go.
No messing around, Shelly.
Yeah.
Not a dragon, the dragon.
The dragon.
Yeah. Bow to the queen.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
That's amazing. I would probably be, I think it's bronze dragons are the ones that are good aligned, but also quite chaotic and... nefarious liars, I think, right? They're a little bit more on that.
Storytellers, Greg.
Storytellers. Right, exactly. Authors.
Yeah.
That Kurt Vonnegut line, I tell lies for a living. I would love to be a bronze dragon named Titoes.
I don't know.
Canon.
It's canon now.
Yeah.
And so you shall be. That's the magic of D&D.
Titoes.
Yep. It's a fact now.
Yeah. That's awesome.
And Kit had a follow-up question on our Discord asking, and then if you had a dragon horde, what would be your horde? What would your horde be made of?
Oh. Well.
That's a good one.
I think, I don't know if you can tell, it's an audio medium, but books would be my horde. I would have lots and lots of books. Yep. I would have as many copies. I probably wouldn't be able to rival Candlekeep, but I would like to have as many copies of books as I possibly could surrounding me, and I would like to lay on them.
Nice.
That's the correct answer.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, this was a test, by the way.
It was. Passed. Flying colors.
I guess that was my answer too, then.
Shelley, you also passed. Hold on.
if there was a second choice, though, Shelley, having already now passed the test.
I mean, I feel like I would... Mine would be food related. It would just be lots of dessert. I'd probably have a big chocolatey dessert hoard. Maybe a little chocolate fondue fountain of just...
This chocolate is from 500 years ago. And it is
just steal rations from adventurers.
Let them go. Just take their food.
Yes. Give me the chocolate. Yeah. Give me a chocolate. Like a little dragon bully stealing lunch from.
Is there candy in rations? I didn't know that.
It's fantasy, Greg.
You're buying the wrong rations. Yeah.
Whatever you want. Of course you would bring a little piece of chocolate with you, wouldn't you?
Yeah. I did cadets at school, and like we used to get our ration packs when we went for walks. Like this was like RAF cadets, the Royal Air Force. And one of the things in the ration pack was boiled sweets. You got a little pack of boiled sweets?
Yes. There
you
go. Everybody deserves.
You need
also
the
got
sugar.
Biscuits called Stop and Go, but we don't
like hobnobs.
yeah. Sort of like fruit, more like, do you know squash fly biscuits?
No.
This might be a really British thing.
That was very British.
Here we go.
No.
I want to hear it.
Okay, I'm gonna Ben now explains biscuits. They're basically just they're
new
a sort
podcast.
Of,
Let's go. I'm here for it.
Yeah, I
do.
They're like quite a hard, slightly sticky biscuit that come in a long sort of like strip, but where you can break them into sections, and they've got raisins and maybe sultanas in them, which look like squash flies. So squash fly biscuits.
Oh, okay. That's appetizing.
Interesting marketing.
They taste better than they sound. Yeah.
I've maybe not sold this. This will be a very limited run of Ben Explains Biscuit.
Ben Explains Biscuit. Today we're going to talk about Lembas bread.
Lembas bread. Delightful.
Oh, yeah.
Small bite will fill a grown small. Adult for a day. Perfect. Sounds delicious.
Four. How much does Samwise eat? No, it's not Samwise. Pippin, isn't it?
They had like two or three loaves.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Well, thank you so much, Greg and Shelley, for coming on No Small Roles today. It's been an absolute blast having
thank
you both
you.
On board.
Thank you.
It has been very fun.
And so hopefully people can pre-order already Welcome to Dragon Talk, inspiring conversations about Dungeons and Dragons and the people who love to play it. It's one of those titles again.
I know.
It's a long one.
It's my hallmark.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, you can pre-order at the University of Iowa Press website or get it through your local bookseller. Tell them to order a copy for you or maybe some extra copies maybe to put on the shelves. Just saying. There's a lot of people out there.
Just I think in time for Christmas.
I think it's great. It is.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a good gift for people who are D&D curious, I think, because there are a lot of folks who have watched Stranger Things or seen all of the content that we've been talking about earlier about And then be like, huh, what is this all about? And I feel like this book, because of its casual kind of tone, as well as the introduction to the different people and what they're doing in the community, can feel like, okay, this is, after reading this, you're like, all right, I know I want to jump in now because of all these inspiring conversations that are in the book.
Mm-hmm. I think it is. It's a fab introduction. Yeah. And also what's lovely as well is to can I spoil the end? Yeah. Greg, that you sort of explained some good next steps for people as well on how to actually take what they've read, the excitement hopefully that they might have found from reading this book about actually getting to play the game, and how they can actually get involved, what some good steps are.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that was important. I was, one of our editors was like, so yeah, what are they going to be able to do?
Now what?
I'm like, all right, this is, you know, concrete steps. Cause that's sometimes really hard to grok, right? It's like, what do I do? Well, here's how you do it. Start a group. Just get playing.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Mm. Yep. Just do it.
And people can find you on Dragon Talk as well every week.
That's right. Every week we got new guests, new content coming. And then, you know, like and subscribe, as they say. But
hit the button below. To...
Smash hit that notification bell.
Yeah, exactly.
All of those things.
And follow us on whatever social media is going to replace Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
No. For now, can find us there.
So where for now can people find you both online, as well as D&D, but also where can people find you individually if they want to follow you?
Well, I'm at Greg Tito on Twitter still, also on co-host, I'm there, and Instagram @Greg_Tito, and everything about Dungeons and Dragons, go to, honestly, D&D Beyond is probably the best resource now to get news and information, as well as the digital versions of our books, and hopefully start playing with some characters you create on there.
There you go. And I'm at Shelley Moo on Twitter and Instagram, and you can go to my website, shelleymazenoble.com. And also, if you're new to D&D and you want to learn how to play and you want some great resources, we have really good videos and infographics at playdnd.com.
It's amazing. So
check it out.
Thank you so much.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. We have a bit of tradition that we always end our podcast with everyone saying anon for now.
In unison.
In unison.
As best as we can.
We can do it.
Always as best as we can. So
no countdowns.
Okay, we're just going wild.
Yeah. We just feel it through the lag spikes, through the ether of the internet. We just
hoping for the best.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now.
Perfection.
I love it.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
What a delight! That was so great.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.